Good afternoon. I call this Committee on Human Services Finance to order. Members, we have a quorum present. And I would like to start with the approval of the minutes. Vice Chair Barner, you know, will you please move the minutes for the 19th?
Yes, thank you, Chair Noor. I would like to move the minutes for January 12th, 2023.
So Vice Chair Barner wants to start with the previously, so we will start with the 19th and then go back to the... Sorry. So we start with approval of the previous minutes on the 19th. So Vice Chair Barner moves the approval of the minutes for January 19, 2023. Any discussions? See none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? See none. The minutes for January 19, 2023 are now approved. With that, we have a slight correction on the minutes of January 12, 2023. Vice Chair Barner, you made the motion to approve those minutes. Would you like us to reconsider that and approve the new? Right.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like us to reconsider the minutes and correct the record for January 12, 2023.
Vice Chair Barner moves the approval of the previous minute with the correction for January 12, 2023. Discussions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you just let us know what the correction is? I think we only, I assume this is just the corrected version?
Correct.
I don't have a previous version here.
So I think you had that. We did not include the approval of the minutes in that minute for the talk. So that is the slight correction that we're making. Any further discussions? See none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? See none. The minutes for January 12th are reapproved. With that, members, we do have a presentation from Minnesota Council on Disability. So we will have a presentation from the council. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. David Dively, welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, everyone. Chair, members of the committee, ranking members. My name is David Dively, and I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Council on Disability. As we begin, I'd like to start by introducing the chair of our council, Ms. Nikki Villavicencio, to kick us off our informational hearing.
Ms. Villavicencio. Madam Chair, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor and committee. My name is Nikki Villavicencio. I live in Maplewood, and I am the chair of the Minnesota Council on Disability. In July of 2019, I was appointed to MCD by Governor Walz. My patience for the disability community to have dignity, respect, and independence in Minnesota was wearing thin then. We had already been in multiple care crises for years. Being a disability advocate for over 14 years has taught me a great many things. The solution to our crises are always collective answers. My hope was that MCD could be the shepherd for the disability community, and that is why I applied to be on MCD. I got my feet wet quickly. I understood that our council is a governing body that advises the governor, state agencies, and you all, the state legislature. All of the everyday work is done by our valiant staff. And I also learned of our shared vision that Minnesota should be a barrier-free environment where every person has full access to all areas of their life. And that the vision is strengthened by our principles of accessibility, equity, and independence. In March of 2020, I was appointed acting chair just as the COVID-19 pandemic took hold of our everyday lives. This was a frightening time for all, but when you don't know when or if your everyday services will be there, it is overwhelming to say the least. For MCD, we were led to make some very influential changes. Typically, a chair of a state agency, as you probably know, is not too bad of a gig. We facilitate meetings, work to understand the strengths of the council members, meet regularly with the executive director, assist in on onboarding new members, and have a key role in planning future events and meetings. Now, chairing during a pandemic at this time is a different animal. There is no doubt that leadership focused in on the true meaning of governing, not by desire only, but by necessity. MCD underwent many great and difficult changes. Our major transitions have strengthened our council board and the policies and oversight of the agency to improve operations and strategic results. As chair and a member of the Minnesota Council on Disability, we look forward to continuing the work with the governor, you, the legislature, the state agencies, and Minnesota to achieve the vision of equity. In the new year, we have many priorities to improve the lives of all Minnesotans. But of them all, my council is eager to reach out and understand more of the complexity that is disability. Thank you for listening to me today, and I sit for any questions.
Thank you so much, Chair Villavicencio. Members, any questions for the chair before we dive into the presentation? Seeing none, if you can stay close by, I'm sure there'll be questions in the end, so we can begin with the executive director.
Thank you again, everyone. Thank you, Chair Villavicencio, Chair Noor, ranking member and members of the committee. My name is David Dively, and I am blessed, honored, and humbled to be appointed as the Council on Disabilities Executive Director. I am a bald white male. We do this audio description for blind and low vision members of our communities. I'm a blind, bald white male with blue glasses, a blue suit coat, a thin blue and white striped shirt, and a blue and red tie. I'm hard of hearing. I have chronic pain and other disabilities as well. But I'm also a parent of a son who has autism, a brother to a sister who is permanently disabled and uses DHS waiver services to live independently. In addition, both of my parents are profoundly deaf and use ASL. My first language is American Sign Language. These issues are both personally and professionally important to me. I've been in this role for about 2.5 years and in the state disability advocacy role for about 7 years. Our agency culture at the Council on Disability is disability affirmative. So imagine working at a place where your disability, that part of who you are, your identity, is celebrated and honored for who you are and not discriminated against. Our goal through policy, advocacy, and technical assistance is to make sure that every government, nonprofit, and private sector environment embraces that same perspective. Disability is not a deficit. It does not make someone less than human. We want to change that worldview across the state, because if government, organizations, businesses all saw disability as a positive part of someone's identity, then it would fundamentally shift us away from barriers, discrimination, and the issues that people experience. And then we'd be invited to be part of the table where we deserve to be. And this is how civil rights, the codes that we work to implement, and the laws that we advocate for translate directly to the people that we serve and to society. We deeply appreciate today's opportunity to provide an overview of our agency, the work that we do, and the advocacy efforts to change the culture and the society of Minnesota systemically. We work by and for people of Minnesota with disabilities that need pragmatic, real, bipartisan solutions that are not about us as individuals, but about the people that we all serve. Three themes that you'll hear from staff today is that we're a host and a convener, bringing people and nonprofits and allies together. We bridge the government leaders with everyday people so that their voices can be heard. And we are driven by the people, as you heard from our council chair, that our governing council is made up of citizens appointed by our governor, who then lead our independent state agency's strategic directions. To give you an idea of some of the demographics of disability in Minnesota, every kind of disability that our agency is responsible for covers the disabilities that you may be familiar with or think about immediately, from something like blindness or deafness, all the way to things that you might not consider, such as complex medical conditions, mental illness, or even HIV/AIDS, veterans with disabilities issues, and others. Since we're not able to get accurate data collection at the state level on disability, here are the best estimates we have about what we have in Minnesota specific to us for adults. About 1 in 4 have a disability in Minnesota. Around 14% have a mobility disability. Almost 11% have a cognitive disability. nearly 7% have a disability that prevents that person from living independently, such as doing their own errands with that kind of executive functioning. Mm-hmm. Approximately 6% are deaf, hard of hearing, or deaf-blind, or other kind of deaf-related hearing disability, and about one-third of that population are ASL users. About 4.5% have a vision disability, so blindness or low vision, and nearly 4% have a disability that prevents them from caring for themselves with hygiene, bathing, and clothing. All in all, about 40% of everyone age 65 and older in Minnesota has a disability, and folks who are in communities of color are more likely to have a disability and more likely for their disability to create even more profound inequities and inequalities in health, education, and employment. Our agency is in its 50th year in existence, but the promise of the Olmstead Supreme Court decision, which is essentially saying that people should live in the communities that they choose to live in the least restrictive environment, with a true choice in where they work, where they play, where they worship, and where they live, should exist, but does not yet exist in Minnesota. So when we need to, we also directly lobby and advocate to the legislature, such as today. Our agency's motto is that we are your policy training and technical resource. And we do that across the private sector, the public sector, with law enforcement, all three branches of government, and local government. You can think of the work that we do into four buckets: policy advocacy, whether it's internal policies that agencies have or organizations have, executive orders, legislative work, training that we offer to all levels of government, from state, local, and federal, to nonprofits and for-profit corporations, technical advisement on disability rights and civil rights laws and code, and workers' compensation claims for people who are permanently disabled as a result of a workplace injury and need a home modification. As an independent state agency, our budget is $1.038, so approximately $1 million per fiscal year, and we are governed, as I mentioned previously, by our governor-appointed members of the community who are a majority folks themselves with disabilities and are disproportionately actually overrepresented from Greater Minnesota. We have more Greater Minnesota council members than we do Metro. We also have 7 staff right now. In the past, we had the budget for about double the number of staff. We are a cross-disability, nonpartisan agency, and we collaborate with as many advocates and legislators and other agencies as possible to serve the over 1 million Minnesotans who have disabilities. This includes following bills or strategic initiatives in nearly every single committee in our legislature and every state agency in the executive branch. And that also means, with one government relations employee on our staff, that we have no redundancy in our agency, and everyone specializes in one thing with no backups if there needs to be one. But if you're wondering what we do on a day-to-day basis, I'm going to go through a couple of brief things, and then I can stand for questions as well. We advise the Department of Health on data collection for health equality and equity issues. A couple of brief examples: people with disabilities, 12% more likely to have diabetes, about twice as likely to smoke or have addiction to nicotine, and nearly 4 times as likely to have heart disease. We mentored the new Rare Disease Advisory Committee agency and their executive director. We regularly consult with Department of Human Services on their policies, their waivers, and other issues. We work with Minnesota Management and Budget on their human resources to update their human resources practices to ensure that we employ and retain people with disabilities in state government. Also, the Affirmative Action Program Connect 700 and improving the quality of ADA coordinators throughout the state government. We collaborate with Vocational Rehabilitation and State Services for the Blind to improve employment opportunities for people with disabilities. Homeland Security for emergency preparedness. With Department of Transportation to ensure accessible and affordable transportation is available in all 87 counties in Minnesota. Department of Transportation on multiple issues, but in general, again, around ensuring transportation is accessible. The Governor's Workforce Development Board, Department of Natural Resources, Parks and Trails, with the Met Council, with the and other various state agencies, counties and cities, school districts, law enforcement offices, to ensure that their policies are ADA compliant and that they have accommodations in place. This includes digital accessibility as well as public meetings such as ASL and interpreters ASL and CART for deaf and hard of hearing attendees. This is all the agency of systemic work we do. We also get dozens of contacts every week by everyday citizens and people who need support for their individual situation, such as job accommodations, service animals, disability parking enforcement, ADA and building code technical guidance and information, and helping people navigate their civil rights remedies. And again, we receive dozens of these requests through every corner of our state, every week, all year. In addition to our founding statute, we have 21 additional statutory obligations throughout our code. We believe that every initiative, every project, every new thing going forward that's about and for people with disabilities should have people with disabilities as a part of that process, and we are one of the agencies that was created to help support this initiative. We spent a significant amount of our effort and our capacity during COVID-19 shifting gears to ensure that folks with disabilities had equitable access to vaccines, protective equipment, and and testing at first as well. That level of technical advisement and participation in the state's Emergency Operations Center helped us to build some very valuable relationships, and those relationships have continued to grow, but so has the need for that technical advisement that we believe uniquely suited to provide to both the executive, judicial, and legislative branches of government. In closing, the employees that I have the pleasure of supervising and working with work tremendously hard, have a heart of service as if we were a nonprofit organization for the work that we do, and are themselves part of many disability communities throughout the state. They put in significant amounts of overtime to accomplish the systemic changes that we see that we need, and work their whole life to ensure that people's lives are fulfilling, their civil rights are protected, and that we advance the culture and society we have in Minnesota for people with disabilities, and for that I'm thankful. Up next, I'd like to introduce Linda Gremion, who will share a little bit about our operations.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Knorr, Ranking Member, and Committee for inviting me here today. My name is Linda Gremion. I'm the Director of Operations for the Minnesota Council on Disability. I've been with the state since 1988 and the council since 2004. I'm a white woman with long hair tied up in a clip wearing an orange sweater sitting in a hearing room in the beautiful state office building. I identify as a woman with several disabilities. I have complex and persistent PTSD, am hard of hearing, and am a cancer survivor. I'm proud and affirmed to work at an agency where disability is celebrated and accommodated. The council has been around since 1973. We've accomplished powerful things for the state over the past 50 years. I've included some of our accomplishments and documents provided to you, but we'll highlight just one. When tax dollars are spent, it's important all people have access. MCD advised on access for the most, at the time, inclusive and accessible sports stadium, Go Twins, in the United States. In the United States. Every stadium built in Minnesota since are all examples of state-of-the-art access. Trevor asked me to tell you how operations is quite literally the people. The MCD budget has two budget categories, programs by way of staffing, approximately 59% of the allotted funds, and the remaining 41% is operations. I'll use the example of our renowned state presence at the Minnesota State Fair because all operational tasks are required to be at the State Fair. You can also apply the same to our legislative forum. HR, IT, procurement, comms, advocating for access, shortlist, all operations. After successfully procuring everything State Fair, organizing and communicating the schedule with staff, commissioners, legislators, citizen advocates, and interpreters, and putting out press releases, attentive, efficient operations often gives us moments like these. I chatted with a legislator who stopped by our booth in the education building. She commented, "Wow, you have like everything here." And I said, "Yep, we partner with all state agencies, a few nonprofits that have a disability mission or lens. We offer partners space and support to present a united disability front, and people love it. Ask anyone, we are the coolest booth in the education building." She said, "I don't think I've ever seen a state partnership like this." Teachers come to our state fair booth in droves. It's the only place they can get funky, cool, educationally valuable art for their classroom. by, for, and about people with disabilities. We send thousands of posters and coloring books to classrooms across the state. Imagine you're a teen of color with a disability, and you, with the safety of your family, visit our state fair booth. A commissioner is there, a black man, who cares deeply about bullying. I ask the teen if he'd like a whistle. We hand out emergency preparedness whistles. And he tells me, yes, I do. Maybe I can use it when I get bullied at school. I ask him, would you like to speak to Commissioner Lindsay? He cares a lot about bullying. The kid tears up, looks at his mom, and says, Mom, I get to talk to a commissioner right now about school. He understands what a commissioner is. He's super excited. That day, Commissioner Lindsay spent about 20 minutes with this kid and his mom. When would he ever have that opportunity? I showed another legislator who stopped by for her chance to chat up the disability community our What Does Disability Pride Mean to You post-it note board. Post-it notes literally fill up our whole entire booth from one end to the other, overflowing. She reads the notes, stunned, affected, moved, and said, I want a word cloud of these answers, because apparently equality, safety, no stigma, acceptance, meaningful lives, equal rights, survival, not easy, being unapologetic, kindness, health equity, school inclusion, equal representation, having dignity, freedom, my child, no shame, no pity, family, power, wholeness, and love mean something. Hey, stop by our booth at the 2023 fair. This word cloud will be a poster and available for you. It'll look great in your office. People want and need a place to belong to their government, even if it's by a post-it note. We are one, and I don't know of many others, place in Minnesota where Minnesotans can just happen upon a conversation with a legislator or a state agency commissioner. Casual, real-life conversations. With successful HR work, many of our former grad students hold meaningful disability-informed positions all over the state of Minnesota, some in Washington, D.C. Because being a professional and informed on disability inclusion is critical to culturally moving forward as a state and as a society. As a council-based agency, we administratively support a citizen-run council, onboarding private citizens to the ways of government. It's never what they think it is. Humbling moment, watching a former chairperson who is used to documenting every ride for government oversight understands that she's been appointed by the governor of the state of Minnesota and her transportation needs are going to be met. Just tell me where and when you want to be picked up. Having her tell us, I've never been treated with this kind of professional dignity and respect. That's good stuff. As a state agency, all of this must be done in a compliant way. Small agencies have a particular operational challenge, as we must perform all the duties required of all state agencies to comply with Minnesota operational standards. We get transactional support from the SMART program, that's Admin Small Agency Resource Team, which doesn't include the professional side of operations. Make no mistake, we absolutely could not survive without the support of SMART. For instance, MCD writes the biennial budget, SMART loads it into the system that MMB uses. Large agencies might have a whole unit equivalent to our entire staff to perform the duties of any one operational aspect. I've included those duties in the supplemental document provided to you and will highlight only one. I open and close the accounting processes each fiscal year. I'm known by SMART staff as Take It to the Limit, Linda, because I don't leave a dime on the table. Our budget dollars do so much and are so tight that I've been known to slide into the biennium with less than $500 on the table. Not one penny goes to waste. Operations is producing video content. When we produce an important story with a person with a disability and they tell us, this is the honor of my lifetime to be celebrated for having a disability, well, nothing like it, folks. Nothing like it at all. Who's honored? I'm honored. Operations is consistent advocacy as we must do and advocate for change in a digitally inaccessible environment. Just last week, in a statewide meeting, I was reminded that many employees with disabilities do not claim their business expenses because the system is inaccessible, gifting those dollars back to the state. That was last week. Note, the vendor system is also not fully accessible. which puts some business owners with disabilities at a disadvantage. You can't compete if you're not in the digital room. We push the enterprise to get it right because the employment and contracting environment needs to improve for people with disabilities. I'm thankful Trevor and David asked me to share what it takes to operate a small agency. Operations can be invisible sometimes, but not when you see the people. Thanks for taking the time to learn about MCD. I'll stand for questions.
Thank you so much, Director Gremlian. So I appreciate it. We'll be asking questions as we hear from Director Tanner. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor and members of the committee. My name is Trevor Turner, and I am the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Disability. And I am a deaf-blind adult, so working with a disability policy is deeply personal for me. And I also appreciate the audio description. So I am a blonde, blue-eyed male wearing a blue suit and a blue tie and a blue plaid shirt. I like the color blue. Our public policy work is guided by our statutory mandates, which describes the powers and duties of our Council on Disability to include advising the state, elected officials, state agencies, and the public on matters pertaining to public policy and programs. We do this through regular meetings with the governor's office, assisting state agencies on their policies and programming, working with legislators to draft and testify on pro-disability bills, and help constituents navigate our political system to instigate change for the better. We do not work in a silo, however. We often collaborate with state agencies and nonprofit partners to create a coalition of organizations to address an issue. A famous deafblind advocate was Helen Keller, who said, alone we can do so little, but together we can do so much. This is the mantra that MCD believes in strongly, and we love working with our partners to make a difference in the lives of Minnesotans with disabilities. I currently serve on the board and policy co-chair of the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, which is a nonprofit coalition of dozens of different disability advocacy organizations. MCD strives to be a leader in the disability community, and we work hard to lift the voices of our partners and of Minnesotans with disabilities themselves. Another statutory mandate is to serve as a source of information to the public regarding all services, program, and legislating pertaining to persons with disability. One way this is done is through our disability bill tracking website, the link which I have included in your supplemental package. We also provide regular public policy updates on social media and our newsletter. We are also statutorily obligated to review and make comment to the governor, state agencies, the legislature, and the public concerning the adequacy of state programs, plans, and budgets for the services for persons with a disability. MCD serves as a watchdog to our state agency, making sure our programs and services are meeting the needs of Minnesotans with disabilities. We also follow legislation and will testify in favor of pro-disability bills, and will even testify against bills that we believe that will harm the disability community. We also regularly listen to the public through surveys, public forums, and listening sessions to learn how everyday Minnesotans with disabilities are navigating and benefiting from our state programs and services. The final statute that guides our public policy work is to research, formulate, and advocate plans, programs, and policies which will serve the needs of persons with disabilities. An example of working with a constituent to find a creative policy solution, I've worked with a man named Damon Liefstad, who is a wheelchair user and a client of PCA services. The PCA workforce shortage crisis hits very close to home, and Damon is constantly worried about how he maintains the services in the coming years. Damon reached out to me and asked if I could help him draft a bill from the ideas that he had, and he would help recruit and retain PCAs in the profession. We worked together with the revisor's office to come up with three bills, two of which have already been introduced into this session, House File 737 and House File 738. These bills are introduced by Chair Noor. I've learned that the best disability policy solutions come from the disability community itself, and I urge our legislators to look toward Minnesotans with disabilities to find solutions for some of the toughest issues facing Minnesota. People with disabilities are natural innovators out of necessity and often can find solutions that no one could think of before. There's frankly not enough time for me to list and talk about all the work that MCD does, but I hope that you as legislators understand the full scope of the problems and issues facing Minnesotans with disabilities. and how Minnesota Council on Disability works tirelessly to make Minnesota a more equitable, inclusive, and accessible place for Minnesotans with disabilities. I'm available for and welcome any questions regarding our agency.
Thank you so much, Director Tana. So following your footsteps, a black male who's bald, wearing gray suit and a blue shirt and a black tie, sitting in front of the desk here as the Chair for Human Services Finance. I know we have a lot of questions, and I just wanted to begin by saying thank you. I think you've done a phenomenal job in the work that you do for inclusion, for accessibility, and making sure that there's equity built in that process, for your advocacy that you come to the table every time, and quite frankly, the comprehensive document that you shared. Even though we're just at the beginning of session, the way that you're tracking the bills that are related to the communities that you're serving, I just wanted to say thank you. Part of the question, I think, will come to the next bill, but I just also wanted to quickly ask you, the rare disease, which is now under the jurisdiction of the MCD, how did that end up in MCD? What is the value? Does it add to MCD? Or should it belong to a different division compared to where it is right now?
This is David Dively speaking. So, yes, we you could say that we host the Rare Disease Advisory Council. However, their operations are fully independent. So they have a separate appropriation ID, a separate funding mechanism, and separate staffing. The extent to which our resources are used is contractually paid for by the Rare Disease Advisory Council for operational support and guidance, and we do give them some free space in our office space. But that's the extent of our logistical support and commitment to them. It's similar to how the Minnesota Commission for the Deaf, Blind, and Hard of Hearing is hosted, so to speak, within Human Services. But they are the Rare Disease Advisory Council is still fully independent and has their own governing council board. It was the decision of MMB to treat the funding appropriation as a whole separate agency entity. And so I oversee their executive director for time card purposes, as a controls require at least one other person to approve a time card. And that's pretty much the extent of our formal legal relationship. We informally advise and support them quite a bit, but that was how that kind of journey came to be. I'm happy to go into more detail if you have more questions.
I think we'll, thank you so much, Director. I think we'll have more conversation on that. Likewise, I think the State Services for the Blind, which is fully hosted under the Department of Economic Development, what is the relationship to the MCD under the work that they're doing at the
That's a great question. So, yes, so State Services for the Blind is partially funded by the federal government and by the state under vocational rehabilitation under DEED. So State Services for the Blind is does orientation and mobility and employment supports, as well as Braille and BOSS printing for people who are blind, low vision, as well as things like the digital speaking library. Our relationship with State Services for the Blind would be collaborative. We serve similar communities. But they are under the governor's cabinet, so they're not an independent agency. They follow the administrative directions of the commissioners and the cabinet and the governor's office. And while we're an independent agency, and so we also are able to advise and advocate independent of the governor's positions on various issues. But also, we don't do direct human services or direct job placement services. It is we are led by policy and civil rights, while they do direct human services to the blind, low vision, and other visual disability communities, for mostly specifically around employment or transitioning out of education into employment, while we interface with all aspects of government and life. So we have some overlap, but quite a bit of difference.
Thank you, Director. The reason that I ask is we do have that connection between the work that you advocate for and the work that we'll be doing. So we'll try to tie, because there's intersectionality between different aspects from human services to DEET to Department of Health in the work that you do, including Department of Labor and Industry. So more conversation, hopefully, to follow on that. I've got other members who have got questions or comments. Representative Park.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm an odd-looking male dressed in blue. And I did want some feedback from, I don't want to mess up the name, so I'll call you Nikki V. I was over a decade ago on the EMSRB, and I have seen the decreased accessibility for non-emergency transport. For years, I've been trying to get a few groups together to work on so you could, you know, we spend billions of dollars on ancient technology trains, but we should be spending some money on doing an app so that, and with smaller buses that are sort of like the shuttle size, to where you could go and into a neighborhood. And the idea is, I'm here, I want to get there, here's the time frame that I need to be there, and the logistics software that FedEx and UPS and all these other companies have efficiently and effectively take care of the transit instead of this fixed to point. And the software, if we had the U, MnDOT, and other entities work together, would also be able to incorporate new technologies. So if you, some of these were electric powered, you'd be able to know when you needed to charge it and switch in another vehicle, when autonomous capabilities in certain regions popped in, and they tested one of those in Rochester.
Correct.
So that way, you didn't have to get to where a bus stop was to get in the chain. And so that microtransit, and I'd like to find out, you know, and have that work for regular transit, but also non-emergency medical transport. So I'd like to get Nikki V's feedback and idea on what you would like to see in that type of, you know, technology, and how that might be, you know, save you. It might take you hours now to do something. I just want to get your feedback.
Yeah, I mean, I think all. Oh, sorry. Excuse me, sir. Chair. Thank you, Chair. Representative. I think all those ideas are great. There's a lot of parts of that that I have a lot of ideas around. You know, we have paratransit at least in the metro area. And, you know, some of what you're talking about as far as, like, efficiency and GPS and things like that, you know, that would require more funding for Metro Mobility and things like that. And as far as non-emergency transportation, you mentioned that first. That's a whole other area that, you know, we spend a lot of money on in giving to another entity that runs that. So there's things in that we could do to try probably make it more efficient. And then as far as up north, there is a new program called Go Marty. Do you want to talk about that, David, real quick?
Director David.
Thank you, Chair, Representative. I believe you maybe, or there's a bill introduced this session that is for NEMT, non-emergency medical transportation modernization, and that is listed on our bill tracker, by the way. So the Go Marty is a connected and automated electronic vehicle that's self-driving that runs in Grand Rapids. I had the privilege of flying up with the MnDOT team, and we supported this project. It's a public-private cooperative collaboration where it's a self-driving van that's accessible to people who use wheelchairs and for those who do not, of course. And it goes throughout the city of Grand Rapids, and people with or without disabilities can use it nights and weekends when there are many fewer opportunities for non-emergency, non-medical transportation. We've been working with Lyft and Uber trying to increase the accessibility of their vehicles with some resistance. So that's an ongoing challenge that we would love to address to ensure that they have the same requirements for accessible transportation as the taxi industry does, which it does not currently. The main challenge here is that because a lot of these services are county to county, you would have, and a lot of times people have to get out go across county, get on a new ride, go across that county, because they're all paid for through county waiver services, even though it's funded initially at the higher level at DHS. But transportation is by and far one of the top two or three issues that we are working on constantly, and would love to work with anyone in this committee and others to continue that. Accessible and affordable transportation, along with housing, are some of the most important issues that we tackle, and it's an excellent question.
Thank you.
Representative Quark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted members, just because you're thinking this is just one bill, when we have groups and so many things are interleaved, intertwined across departments and areas, mm-hmm. So when we have groups come forward, it's an opportunity to come up with the light bulb or the apple hitting your head. And I just want you to think out of the box, and then after the committee meeting, you know, chat with them, because that's how we can make things more fully implemented. Thank you.
Thank you, President Palmer. And I appreciate you, Executive Director Dave Lee, for mentioning the challenges with Uber and Lyft. We're working on a way to actually make sure that it works for everyone, including those who are the drivers. So
yes.
We've got a bill coming up in the Labor Department. So we have Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and white female, gray hair, blue jacket, black blouse. Appreciate hearing the presentation today and how your work is part of all of our committees and all of our agencies, and that how much we rely on you. So I hope that you feel that respect and trust that we have in your agency. And I just did want to call attention to the fact that one of your priority bills we're hearing at 3:00 today, we'll probably be seeing you then at that hearing. It's Representative Edelson's House File 71. So thanks for the work on that, and we look forward to hearing this afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. So that's another bill to follow today. And the next person is Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Executive Director and Directors, and Chairwoman. I just wanted to give a little bit of background on the Rare Disease Advisory Council to your question earlier. It started out in 2019 as the Chloe Barnes Rare Disease Advisory Council. It was housed at the University of Minnesota. And through mutual agreement with the university, driven by the board itself, the council itself, they wanted to move to a more independent agency. There were restrictions based on the use scope and some risks that they would be placed at, and it was more beneficial to the vision and the mission of the advisory council to be housed within a state agency. There were a lot of discussions, and the Council on Disabilities was seen as the best host for it.
Thank you so much for the background, Representative Bryan. I was sitting in this room when that conversation happened in 2019, so thanks for the feedback. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know. Indigenous woman, great earrings, black suit, black hair. Oops, I don't know. All things. Okay, so Representative Quam, you brought up this transportation piece, and it's interesting to me because, like, when I live in a world, I don't realize what's not happening in other spaces. So in the IHS world, we have CHRs, which are community health representatives, that actually go out to pick people up to come to their appointments. Also, things they can do is pick up their meds, because that's something that creates difficulty, and I imagine that's something in your population and community that's necessity. As I'm learning about how things work off the reservation, I'm learning that's not typically something that we see in a lot of spaces. Can you explain maybe, okay, one, I'm really intrigued about these self-driving vans, but can you tell me, like, maybe what would mirror what a CHR rep is doing for IHS programs and maybe what you guys are doing in your programs?
Director David.
Yeah, thank you, Representative. Yes, so that is a fantastic benefit with IHS that is not available to folks with disabilities. The closest parallel we would have would be PCA services or what will become CFSS services, where people can have a personal aide that supports them. They wouldn't do something like leave the home of the, with the person that they're caring for or supporting and go get their medicine for them in return, but they could potentially bring them, or that's not true right now, meet them at the pharmacy, pick up the medicine together, and then meet them back at their home, or things like that. We're working on a bill that would allow them to drive their clients, but that's currently not allowed by statute. So they do ride separately and then work together and then ride separately back home and then work together. And there are community health workers, although there are almost none that work in the disability space. So they're mostly cultural language communities. Like there are deaf community health workers and, of course, other racial and ethnic community health workers that help support within the medical environment, but not that maintain that kind of independent support that you're talking about with the CHRs through IHS. We don't have anything close to that, although that would be lovely.
Sounds extremely cumbersome.
Yes.
In what you're doing when we're trying to reduce barriers. And for once, the tribal nations actually have maybe a template of something that we can use that's beneficial to be more effective, especially in greater Minnesota. Just to verify, I guess, what you said so that I can wrap my mind around it. We literally drive to a county line and wait for somebody else to pick somebody up to go to another service because that county doesn't provide the service. Like, can't we do any like jurisdictional partnerships? That just seems real. I also from imagining, I mean, if there's wheelchairs and we're maneuvering people, that's not like, so we're just stopping in the middle of the road, maneuvering people and then have to do that to get them back home.
Because funds are monitored and given at a county by county level, the transportation is only offered within that county. So imagine if you live in Dakota County, they would, and you need to get to, I'll make it up, Ramsey County, you would have a transit. And this is a bad example because we have Metro Mobility, which is cross, which covers the metro, but a similar parallel. They would drop you off at a location near the border, and then you would have other transportation that would then bring you within Ramsey County. But because the funding follows the person but also goes to the counties, counties don't have a cooperative sharing agreement where they could pay someone to go from one county to another in a single trip. It has to be broken up by county.
No more questions. Thank you for that. But I agree. I think we need to address that in many ways. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think Representative Plum, do you want to make
a comment? Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are a lot of ambulance services that trade off at boundaries. And in rural Minnesota, there are a lot of issues of collaboration and coordination that would be assistive. And that's why if we get the technology, we can have everybody talking on the same app, and maybe we can do things more efficiently, save money, because any money we save, we get to help more people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's use technology for the good.
Well, as the chair, you know, technology is our way out. As a person who whose background is IT, we've got more work to do there. So thank you so much. Thank you, Executive Director, and also Public Policy Director. Thank you so much. We'll now move to our first bill for the day, and we have House File 377. Representative Hicks, did you want to move House File 377?
Yes.
So your motion is Representative Hicks moves House File 377 to be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, please introduce your bill and tell us what it does.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you, members, so much for coming today and for listening to MCD's presentation today. As someone who's been in the disability community for my whole life, I know how valuable their supports and services are to the nonprofit world, but also to all of you and to all of us. As you heard from them today, they are an amazing resource full of knowledge and information to support us as legislators, but also to support our local communities, our local cities, our local counties, and our state as a whole. They are coming today to ask for an increase in their funding. They come every 2 years to ask for their funding, but this time they are asking for an increase. In 2003, when the state was in a deficit, cuts were made to balance the budget. To be clear, those cuts in 2003 were primarily made on the backs of people with disabilities and the organizations that support them. MCD was one of those organizations that took a significant cut, 46% to be exact, and they have yet to recover from that slice in their operating budget. They, like many other organizations with disabilities, have continued to advocate for people with disabilities and also for themselves to try to recoup back to the level of support that they had before. As you heard them speak about, they have a lot of statutory requirements. An audit showed that to meet all of those requirements, they would need 15 full-time staff. They have 7. So this budget request that they're coming for is, and that I am supporting, is hoping to get them to that level so they can do the amazing work that they're doing across the state and continue to improve the lives of people with disabilities and support our state of Minnesota. It's time to bring their funding into alignment with the work that they do and the work that they need to do for Minnesota. As we talked about here during this robust conversation, there are holes in our system, and MCD is the expert organization to help us identify how to best fill those holes through their collaboration with so many other organizations, people, and us. So my request today is that we lay this bill over so that we can increase their funding moving forward.
Thank you so much, Representative Hicks. I think based on our customary and traditions, when you present the first time in a committee, there's always a trick that comes along with that. we'll waive that for today, but just wanted to appreciate you bringing that bill forward. We have one testify.
Can we do a roll call and vote on delaying that, or? Okay, I'll table that.
Thank you for that statement, Representative Quam. But we're still on that bill at 377. The first testifier is Policy Director Tana. Welcome to the committee again. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and thank you, Representative Hicks, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Trevor Turner. Again, I'm the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Disability. The Minnesota Council on Disability is the only state agency that advocates for all disabilities, the only independent state agency that advocates for all disabilities. The council was created in 1973, the same year the Human Rights Act was passed, in order to increase disability representation in state government. For most Minnesotans in American history, people with disabilities were often excluded, ostracized, or institutionalized and had no official representation in our state government. The Minnesota Council on Disability was established in 1973 to provide some representation and to address the inequalities that Minnesotans with disabilities face in all aspects of their lives. Adjusted for inflation, MCD was appropriated just over $1 million to carry out its statutory mandates to advise and assist the state government and the public on disability issues. MCD played a pivotal role in disability advocacy in the subsequent decades, including playing a part in the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act. During this informational hearing, you learned about the work that MCD has done and continues to do. The average increase in our budget was about 11% per biennium, and at its peak in the 1990s, MCD had about 70 employees to carry out the obligations in our founding statute. However, between 2003 and 2009, MCD's budget was nearly halved, causing major reductions in staff and program capacity. In 2011, we started receiving budget increases again, but only at an average of 4% per biennium. This means that adjusted for inflation, our current budget in 2023 has not reached the same level as it was in 1973. House File 377 would bring our budget up to $2.2 million a year. MCD used to have a dedicated program and policy staff for education, employment, transportation, ADA access, and health care. Now we only have one, which is my role as Public Policy Director. Our current budget only allows us to have 7 full-time employees with current staffing levels. With current staffing levels, MCD often must choose between assisting our state government or providing programming for the public, despite our statutory mandate to do both. The demand from the legislature, governor, state agencies, and the public for MCD's counsel and advocacy has grown considerably in the past 3 years. This is in large part because of the success of the disability rights movement and MCD's own work to ensure accessibility and inclusion of Minnesotans with disabilities in our state. More than ever, legislators and state leaders are keeping people with disabilities in mind when crafting new policies and state services, which has increased the demand for resources, advice, research, and advocacy from MCD. The COVID-19 pandemic and Minnesota's national reckoning on racial injustice has spurred even more and more Minnesotans' desires to tackle and dismantle the inequalities of marginalized people, including people with disabilities. The Minnesota Council on Disability thanks Chair Knorr and members of this committee for hearing House File 377, and we thank Representative Hicks for being its chief author. We believe it is a transformational bill that will have a direct impact on the lives of Minnesotans with disabilities. House File 377 would give MCD a stronger capacity to serve our community and help ensure our state government is equitable, accessible, and meeting the needs of the disability community in our state. Thank you, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you so much, Policy Director. The question that I have for you is, what will be the projected FTEs with the increases of 1.8 and 2.285?
The objective FTEs would be 8 more staff, so it would be a total of 15 FTEs.
So for fiscal year 24?
So for fiscal year 24, we'll probably start a little bit slower because it will take some time to, you know, hire and recruit people for the positions. So that's why we asked for a little bit less in the first year. But in the second year, by the time fiscal year 2025, we hope to have a full 15 staff members.
Thank you so much. Members' discussions? Discussions on the bill? Seeing none, I just wanted to, Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I just want to say thank you to everyone who is here today, including Ms. Villa Vincencio, who is a fierce and tenacious advocate for the disability community. I would question whether anyone in this room does not know her well for that reason. And just as a point of contention, I would like to think the Minnesota House Booth was the coolest at the fair, but it could be that we are in close proximity to the Minnesota Council with Disabilities booth, which is pretty awesome. I just wanted to say thank you for bringing this bill forward, and I think that we continue to talk about how we do better for folks in our communities with disabilities, and I know that there, as we also see our populations aging, as we see more individuals out with disabilities, and we are acknowledging that reality, I think we are also coming to a place where we are ready, willing, and able to accept that we have not always done a very good job, right? Particularly with addressing the needs of folks within the disability community. And I certainly understand that the mission that you do is extremely, extremely important. And so I want to thank Representative Hicks and Mr. Turner for coming today to walk through the parameters of the bill and look forward to working more with you in the future. And incidentally, I think you may have left a bill off of your list. I believe if you check out the newest version of the ERA bill, you may want to add that to your list as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Brown. Representative Hicks, your closing remarks for the bill.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you, members, for listening today. I could not speak any more powerfully about the importance of this work than our friends from MCD did today. So I would just close in asking you to remember that we rely on them as legislators, the state relies on them, people with disabilities rely on them, and we need to put make sure that we are supporting them so they can continue to do that good work. So.
Thank you so much. With that, Representative Hicks renews her motion, House File 377 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much. So we now move to the next bill. Right. So yes, the bill is laid over. Just wanted to make sure that is corrected. We have House File 480. for Pisavelki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Elkins. I will move your House File 480 to be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, please explain your bill.
Yes, thank you. So House File 480 is kind of the third iteration of an idea that was originally brought to me in my freshman year by a self-advocate named Noah McCourt, who was on the autism spectrum. For a while, I don't know if he still does it, Trevor, but he had a hobby of suing cities to make their websites more accessible to people with visual and other disabilities. And so he, with his support and prodding, the first version of this bill in 2019 would have established a grant program that cities could tap into to hire consultants to help them with the accessibility of their websites. And over this period of time, the capabilities of the Minnesota Council on Disabilities itself have matured to the point where, in this year's version of the bill, what we're asking is that the MMCOD be able to hire an additional person to directly assist small cities and counties make their own websites more digitally accessible to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act. With me, Trevor Turner has been here up here all afternoon. So, would you like to add anything, Trevor?
Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Turner. So, please reintroduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair Noor, and thank you for going for a triple crown today. Mm-hmm. My name is Trevor Turner. I'm the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Disability. And the council supports House File 480, a constituent-initiated bill that would provide funding for MCD to empower local governments with the tools and training needed to ensure their digital presence is accessible to Minnesotans with disabilities. As buildings need wheelchair-accessible ramps and public signs need Braille alternative text, so too does our public digital infrastructure need to be accessible to everyone. The digital realm is no longer a privilege for some, it's a right to all. Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act and Chapter 363A for the Minnesota Human Rights Act mandate that our government and its services be accessible for everyone, and that must include websites as well. Much of the government business nowadays is conducted online, and past 3 years have made it explicitly clear how important digital access for local governments and their residents to interact with each other, ranging from snow emergency alerts to informational videos on public health, applying for permits, paying taxes and fines, and most importantly, participating in local civic discourse. Accessible government, especially digital government, allows for people with disabilities to live independently in the communities of their choice. As a person who is deafblind, I personally understand how important website accessibility to the online experience is. If a government website is incompatible with high contrast features or screen readers, it completely excludes the blind and low vision community. If videos that convey important information do not have captions, this excludes the deaf and hard of hearing community. Many Minnesotans with disabilities rely on websites of their city or county to learn about local services, receive news alerts, and to interact with their local officials. Due to budget constraints and limited resources, many small cities, towns, and counties are unable to dedicate funds to ensure that their websites are accessible. This can lead to underrepresentation of disability issues in local government because Minnesotans are unable to engage with their local officials. It can be dangerous because Minnesotans with disabilities may miss local emergency alerts or not have access to critical emergency phone numbers and points of contact. Inaccessible websites can also cause insurmountable barriers in paying fees, taxes, and fines to local government that use websites to conduct these services. The need is tremendous, but this bill is a step forward in the right direction. We appreciate the support of Representative Elkins and the Human Services Committee on this bill, and we will continue to engage the stakeholders, including local governments and advocates, to ensure that their websites are accessible for all. And thank you, Chair Knorr, and thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you so much, Director Tana. So, member discussion?
No, we have one more testifier, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have Mr. Lightfoot. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Knorr, members of the committee, Daniel Lightfoot, Intergovernmental Relations with the League of Minnesota Cities. The League of Cities represents 837 of the state's 854 cities. And I'm here to testify in support of House File 480. I just want to thank certainly Representative Elkins and the Council on Disabilities for working with us on this issue. As Trevor noted, technology obviously presents a great opportunity for cities to provide important information to their residents, but also challenges in making sure that information is accessible to all residents, not just the sort of the shell of the website, but also the information that gets put on the website. To make matters more challenging, technology used by residents and the technology used for a city website itself is also constantly changing, which is why resources to support cities in making sure that both the framework and the information is accessible is really important. And that training piece is critically important given how technology is continuing to change. We view this bill as an important first step to provide additional resources and training for city staff to ensure that pertinent city information is accessible to all residents and provides for critical training resources that will be adaptable as technology continues to change. We also hope that in addition to the training resources to support cities and counties with this ongoing support, we have an ability to take some of what we learn from this program over the next 2 years and come back to the legislature with some better informed metrics on what it will take to ensure that all 854 cities have websites that are accessible and staff at those cities ensure that they are able to place information on that website that can continue to be accessible for all residents. So with that, Mr. Chair, members, happy to stand for questions as well. And I also do want to point out that the League did co-sign a letter with the Association of Minnesota Counties, which is in your packet, and that organization is also supportive of this bill as well.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lightfoot, for your testimony. If you can wait for a minute, so we have a few questions coming through. Do we have any other public testifier? Anyone in the public who wanted to testify on this bill? See none. We'll go to member discussions. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this even on?
Yes. Sorry.
It's on. Okay. Just curious. I did a little search, an engine search, and there are private sector companies that do this already. So why would we use government dollars and put them toward your organization, Mr. Lightfoot, when cities can, you know, go to the private sector?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Franson, thanks for the question. I think I'll let Representative Elkins weigh in on that too. First of all, the bill does provide the resources not to the League of Minnesota Cities, but to the Minnesota Council on Disabilities to do the training. You are correct in the sense that there are private entities that do website overhauls, and that's sort of what I was referring to as kind of the framework or the shell of the website. And that's certainly important work. What we have seen with so many of our member cities is oftentimes the framework or the shell of the website is accessible or close to accessible, but it's the information that it gets put on that website that's not accessible. And that's where that training comes in to make sure that, especially in a smaller city, a city clerk who's doing a million other different things has the knowledge to understand how to make the material on that website accessible.
Representative Franson.
Mr. Chair, can
Mr. Chair. I'm just learning here, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I would add, Mr. Chair, that and Representative Franson, that
the larger cities and counties don't really have much of an issue with this. They have significant IT staffs and pretty much are pretty good at managing themselves. But a lot of our smaller counties and smaller cities just don't have the resources. And, you know, providing the ability for them to just reach out to the Council on Disabilities, to an expert there when they've got questions or concerns, it's the most cost-effective way to do it. The smaller cities and towns just don't have the resources to hire a consultant to do this work.
All right, Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And my apologies, I am a white woman with a brunette hair, a deep blue sweater, and black pearls. So my apologies. I serve as the vice chair for the committee here. You know, I've spent my career over 20 years in IT and primarily working with teams who develop software for a living. And I can tell you that this is, as we evolve in the world, and Mr. Lightfoot so poignantly pointed out, that we are continuing to move more services online because of ease of use. Folks love it, and it will surprise no one here to find out that an Agile Scrum Master loves the idea of people-centered design. But that said, we do know in the private sector that there is a real concern around making sure that websites are accessible. You know, the Targets of the world, the Optums of the world, for example, both of which I have worked for. And I think that Representative Elkins pointed out very acutely that what we're really aiming at here is making sure that those small cities and counties who don't have dedicated staff have the training that they need to understand what's required to be accessible, how that they can make small tweaks in the way that they operate to make sure that designs are accessible, that they are user-friendly, that they do have that people-centered design approach, which isn't always easy, but once you've been properly trained how to do it, most folks can really easily adapt to doing that. So I think it makes sense, and this is a really good one-time use of funds to get that training out to the cities and counties to be able to do this work. And so I really think it's a great idea whose time has come, and as we evolve more into that self-service model, it is about independence, which was part of what we talked about with the Minnesota Council of Disabilities. It's talk about accessibility, equity, and independence. And I think that this bill meets all three of those thresholds. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair. And I think people will need to know what is Agile Scrum Master. So we'll talk about that later. So, Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still an odd-looking male dressed in blue. The accessibility issue in that, I think, is important. But having... I worked on a TBI bill, and actually before Representative Hicks was representative, her and I talked, and I worked on a bill to try and improve the software, and we need a portal because we got a patchwork with a very complex set of programs, and we also have with the TBI, there are different qualification parameters, you know, how much assets you can have, what's your income, and et cetera. And I think that the IT people that are in the legislature need to get together and help push a portal so that both the cities, the counties, you know, government, and the people that are looking to help and assist can look and see the same things and maneuver through because you've got people in each county, they might be looking at the same website, but they aren't, I don't think, fully understanding this huge complex system. So make it accessible, but let's also look at making it more understandable and have, you know, you can do, you select certain things and it looks out and sees what are the options and programs. It tells you what are the different qualification things. I think that would help the people that even can reach and look at the website understand this strange bureaucracy that is rather complex. So I'd hope the author and a few members of this committee could maybe get together on the side and help the back issue. And I really appreciate for the small counties that, you know, we've got a lot of towns bigger than some of these small counties, and we've got a lot of small towns. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Franson, you want to decide?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, I just want to say thank you for bringing this bill forward because it gives me a lot to think about. Mm-hmm. Even we all probably utilize websites to get into the position that we are at. Mm-hmm. So now I'm kind of thinking, like, what work we can do mm-hmm. to better communicate our ideas to our constituencies. So thank you for that. And then just back to the question, Representative Elkins, or the comment that you made regarding the individual that was going from city to city. Mm-hmm. I know there was a gentleman that was probably not, maybe not the same guy, but.
Probably was.
Okay, that was going, you know, and I ended up in my district. I met with a couple of constituents. This bill being brought forward isn't part of a settlement, is it? No. Okay, I just want to make sure that that wasn't the case.
No, we want to put Mr. McCord out of business.
I don't. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. So
I don't think he's sued anybody lately.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Franson. So, Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep. Elkins. A real quick question. I just was a little confused. So the $250 being appropriated in 2024 and 2025, is that specifically just for hiring one individual to do this, you know, training and provide opportunities for all counties to.
You might want Mr. Turner to.
Representative Elkins.
That's where I found a little confusion. Or is it also tied in with, is there a software program that's already been made? Like, that's what I'm sure. curious about.
No.
Director Turner.
Thank you. So the $250 would be used to hire probably two FTEs to address this issue because there's quite a number of small counties and cities. And the hope is that we can develop a sustainable training program for and working with the cities to make sure that they're not just their websites are accessible, but their documents and like PDFs and what other things, Word documents, stuff like that are all accessible. We actually already have an in-house digital accessibility coordinator, although he is mostly focused on our state websites. And so we talked to him, and he said that to continue doing this and to train other people would probably require at least two FTEs plus additional a little bit of funding to cover any programmatic cost.
Thank you, Chair. So real quick, will some of the smaller cities and will they incur any extra, you know, costs on top of, you know, we heard, you know, to be a part of this website, to be a part of this training, will they incur extra costs above and beyond bigger counties?
Director Turner.
It would be no cost to the cities or the counties.
Okay, so basically the $250 is for two full-time employees, not one.
Okay. Director Turner. I just wanted also to follow up. This is only one-time funding for the fiscal year 24 and 25. It's not an ongoing funding.
Yeah.
So just to follow up with that.
Representative Gilman.
Thank you. So, okay, so that's really great that you say that. If it's a one-time appropriation, but it's for employment of two employees, my question is then, that would be an ongoing investment that we'd be making on those two full-time employees. It would not be then a one-time appropriation. It'd be incurred. It'd be absorbed.
Director Turner.
As the bill is written right now, it would just be one time. So the Council on Disability would have to focus on programming, just hiring for the next 2 years, and doing as much of the training as possible, and then hopefully with the report, you know, if the program is successful, we can continue the. Programming after that. But right now it would just be for the 2 years, and that's all we would plan for.
Thank you, Representative or Chair Noor. That piqued my interest because, as we know, websites have to be updated. And so I don't want to see us in a situation where the website goes.
Yeah. I'll go back to Representative Elkins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think with a program like this, it's new. We want to see if it works. If we can prove that it works and we are confident that will, then we will come back for the next funding cycle and request additional funding. And if it really works, we'll request a funding with TAIL so that it's an ongoing program.
Derek, then how does this play with the additional FTEs requested in the previous bill?
So this would be different employees than the one that we're requesting. And I can provide a more detailed layout of how we would spend the MCD funding that we requested earlier in the previous bill. But this would be a separate new FTEs.
Well, thank you so much. Hopefully all the members will get the details for the additional FTE request and also inclusive of this. Plus, if we can also get the data breakdown that we had earlier on so that we have some visual understanding of how many individuals in different categories that we discussed. Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Just to kind of tie it back to the other bill, MCD has to come to us every 2 years for their funding. Every 2 years they come. And so I don't know specifically, I don't want to speak for the author of this bill, but I think it's safe to say that if this was successful, we could have a broader conversation 2 years from now when we look at other funding about how to incorporate moving forward. But they come every 2 years. So I just sort of want to clarify that this is an ask that is ongoing. They come every 2 years for their ask.
Just wanted to get a more clarity, Director Tanner. So the actual numbers are in the base. And the additional funding will increase the base. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
All right. So automatically you're included into the future budgets based on that. So just wanted to make that clear. And I think I see Director Davely wanted to make additional comment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, members. Chair, just to make it really clear, the $250,000 appropriation across 2 years that Representative Elkins's bill proposes would be a separate and new programmatic category that we do not currently serve or offer to state local government, to local government units. And that's why our general operating appropriations request bill is separate from this request. This is a one-time funded bill that, I'll be honest, if it's effective, it may need to become something that's longer term because of some of the representatives' proper prompts here about how things do evolve and change over time. And so our task would be to figure out how to be most effective with a limited time span and limited funding to make sure we can make a difference and report back to the legislature on what that looks like. We did receive a fiscal note request for this bill, and so that will be accompanied as well by the due date that came through today, the request for that. But the appropriation that was heard earlier in this committee hearing does not include ongoing funding for this program in any form. It would be completely separate. I just want to make sure they're very distinct in how you consider each bill.
Thank you so much, Executive Director Davely. With that, I wanted to give Representative Elkins for the final remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so this bill was developed in cooperation with the Minnesota Council on Disabilities, the Minnesota IT Services Office of Digital Accessibility, which provides amazing resources, and the cities and the counties. If I had been just a little bit more organized today, I would have used a digitally accessible PowerPoint to present the bill today. It's among the resources that the State Minute Office of Accessibility provides, and Emily Emily Settergren, who works in the legislative reference library here, has taken the basic minute accessibility templates for all of the PowerPoint applications, and she customized one for me for our use. I can provide the templates to anyone who is interested, or Emily. Emily and the Legislative Coordinating Committee staff also provides resources to us if we want to make our own communications more digitally accessible, because we are also covered, bound by the requirements of the Americans with Disability Act. So there usually is training for at least our staffs on how to make documents accessible. And I would encourage you to, encourage your own staffs to go through the training, go through it yourself if you can. Personally, I was talk about, I like our own campaign websites. So my daughter created mine, but I did the maintenance this year. And because I've been through the training on how to make a website accessible myself, I recognized as I was, adding pictures to a page that, and I was using Squarespace, and many of us probably use Squarespace for our websites. But when you add a picture onto your, campaign website using Squarespace, there's this little box with metadata where you can put on the title, and I notice the first time I opened it up, there's a place where you can put alternate text. I would not have known what alternate text was if I had not been through digital accessibility training myself. But if someone who is tabbing through a website who is visually impaired, if they tab over that picture and they can't see the picture, but the alternative text might be, this is Representative Bonner wearing her blue shirt and black pearls, so that even though the person can't see the picture itself, they know that there's a picture there and that's what it's a picture of. So those are the kinds of things that you would learn, say, as an employee of a small city through this training, is that, your website is built using Squarespace. These are the tools that are available to you within Squarespace, and this is how you should use them to make your own website digitally accessible.
Thank you so much, Representative Elkins, for bringing this bill forward. I'm also sure that you're putting the out on your Twitter and other social media, because there are also options to put that information there. Mm-hmm. With that, members, we don't have any other agenda item. We are now adjourned. Thank you so much.